In the mountains of northern Haiti, surrounded by a lush forest, sits a palace. And this palace was a masterpiece. There were multiple gardens, multiple fountains, and a hall of mirrors. It was known as the Versailles of the Caribbean, an emphasis on was, because Sanssouci is now a ruin. But you can't really know Sanssouci without knowing the man who lived there, the king of Haiti, Henri Christophe.
Henri Christophe, honestly, is one of the most remarkable, if tragic, men rulers of the Western world. And I think that his story fascinates so many people because at the end of the day, they don't know what to think of him because he's amazing monuments that we still have. But of course, in his day, they weren't monuments. They were symbols of Black sovereignty and Black leadership.
King Henri Christophe, a man whose legacy includes multiple revolutions, and in Haiti, thanks to his enormous structures, a name that will live forever, just as he intended. My name is Baudelaire, and this is Atlas Obscura, a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. Today, we go to the town of Millau in Haiti to hear the story of Haiti's first, last, and only king, and how his crumbling palace remains a symbol of a dream. More after this.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
If you're looking for a place where the wide open skies and the towering mountains inspire you to find an untapped part of yourself, you might want to take a trip to Wyoming. It's a place where bold, curious spirits forge their own way on all types of adventures. There is no shortage of iconic, expansive landscapes out there. You can discover breathtaking hikes, stunning state parks, authentic Western culture, and other historic sites, along with the tales of famous outlaws like Butch Cassidy and pioneers like Buffalo Bill Cody. The truth lies west. Discover yours at travelwyoming.com.
In northern Haiti, there's really two monuments that Haitians talk the most about. One is the Citadel. It's a massive fortress sitting atop a mountain. We did an episode about it a couple years ago. And the other monument is Sanssouci Palace. And they were both built by the same man, Henri Christophe. Today, Henri Christophe's Sanssouci Palace isn't in the best shape.
Sanssouci is in ruins because there was a huge earthquake in May 1842 that crumbled the palace beyond repair.
This is Marlena Doubt. Like me, she's a Haitian American. She's also a professor of French and African American Studies at Yale University. She also studies the Caribbean with a particular focus on 19th century Haiti.
You see the Hall of Mirrors, and you really have to use your imagination to try to think about what it was like.
We do have an idea of what Sanssouci looked like at its height because Henri Christophe loved the arts. He loved theater and music, but he also loved paintings. So much so, he would allow painters from all over the Western world to live in his palace so they could paint pictures of the place and its scenic views of northern Haiti. Another thing Marlena and I have in common is we grew up hearing from our parents the legend of Sanssouci. If you go there today, you see sprawling ruins of this massive castle surrounded by Haiti's many mountains. But in the Haitian imagination, Sanssouci is so much more than just ruins.
For me, Sanssouci Palace is still, it's the symbol of a dream unrealized, a dream kind of stopped in its tracks.
That dream began in 1767 with an enslaved boy named Henri Christophe in what is now Grenada. He would first pop up on history's radar when at just 12 years old, he was a part of a battalion of Africans called the Chateau Volontaire that fought on the side of the Americans in the American Revolution.
Probably is digging trenches because of his young age, but nonetheless receives a bullet wound in the leg, and from there on to Saint-Domingue.
Saint-Domingue is Haiti's colonial name. As a member of the Chateau Volontaire, Henri Christophe should have been granted his freedom, but he wasn't old enough to advocate for himself when he got back to Haiti. So his enslavement continued, and he was put to work in a luxurious hotel in the northern city of Cap-Français. That's where he would spend the next decade.
But one of the remarkable things is that this hotel is the theater of some revolutionary action pretty quickly, because it's one of Saint-Domingue's and certainly Cap-Français's most prominent kind of locales. And so he's there and witnessing all of this and hearing these conversations. And there are eyewitnesses who put him there. And the thought and the idea is that he learned to read there, because there were all of these erudite travelers always coming through.
In 1791, the Haitian Revolution kicked off, and throughout the war, Henri Christophe rose through the ranks, climbing the ladder until he was second in command and then general-in-chief of the entire Haitian army. In the end, the Haitian Revolution would become the first and the only successful slave revolt in world history. A couple years after the end of the Haitian Revolution, Haiti fell into a civil war, and the country was split right across the middle. Henri Christophe would be king of his own nation, North Haiti. King Henri Christophe's North Haiti was prosperous. Even though the powers of Europe united to block all news and trade from Haiti post the Haitian Revolution, Henri Christophe was able to break through those embargoes.
Despite the fact that there was still a lot of racism about and commentary about his rule, he had a lot of the respect of the world powers, even if they weren't willing to say it outright, principally because they wanted to trade with Haiti. They saw a huge opportunity there.
In North Haiti, there was a public school system and there were hospitals. But the image of the strength and wealth of the new nation would be King Henri Christophe's two iconic structures, his mountaintop fortress, the Citadel, and his residence, Sanssouci Palace.
It was the home of the royal family. It had started to be built around 1808, 1809, but it's so opulent, stretching over many, many acres, it's enormous, that it actually wasn't finished to the point where the family could move in until 1813.
After King Henri Christophe and his family moved into Sanssouci, they began to hold all types of parties with guests from most of the Western world, especially England, the US, and Germany.
And they would give toasts, and they loved the king. This was incredibly lucrative for them. And he put them up at the palace itself, and, you know, they were waited on hand and foot, so they loved being there.
But Sanssouci wasn't just about impressing the West. King Henri Christophe was proud of his African heritage and wanted Sanssouci to be a symbol that even after the experience of enslavement, Africans could rise to the levels he was able to reach. Sanssouci rivaled the greatest castles of Europe and was even compared to Versailles, the most luxurious palace of Haiti's former colonizer, France. Marlena tells me that the splendor of Sanssouci might be rooted in Henri Christophe's time before the Haitian Revolution, when he was working in that fancy hotel.
You know, I mentioned he worked at that opulent hotel where he saw some of the richest people who lived in the colony, because if they lived somewhere else and they had to do business in Cap-Français, they would stay there because it offered baths and it had stables for their horses and they had these elaborate dinners. And he saw the richest foreigners there as well, who were selling things from India and from all over the world. So he saw fine things in life. He saw carriages, which he was famous for ordering these elaborate carriages. Christophe was from England. He saw, I think, the life that he wanted.
My mom will say, like, I'll be like, hey, mom, you ever been to the Citadel? She'll be like, oh, Citadel and Christophe. He has kind of etched his name into history in a way that seems so intentional that, like, I wonder how conscious he was of Sanssouci and of the Citadel and, you know, the ripple effects through history.
He definitely wanted to be remembered in terms of just his speeches and the way that he would frame these things. He called the Citadel that boulevard of independence. He talked about creating the palace and the Citadel as monuments.
In August of 1820, King Henri Christophe suffered a stroke, and rumors began to spread that the king may never recover.
But then Christophe, as so many people who have strokes, you know, do, he recovered. He could talk again, he could walk, but he was a little bit paranoid. He'd heard whispers that there were some conspiracies underfoot.
Even though King Henri Christophe made his recovery, there were still doubts as to whether or not he was still that strong ruler that his kingdom needed.
Jean-Pierre Boyer, then the leader of South Haiti, took advantage of the situation. He had his eyes set on reuniting the country and overthrowing King Henri Christophe. He took advantage of the paranoia and mistrust brought on from King Henri Christophe's stroke and began to turn the king's subjects against him. And it worked. King Henri Christophe's inner circle, one by one, started to align themselves with Jean-Pierre Boyer and his efforts to reunite Haiti. This led to King Henri Christophe falling into a depression. That depression ended with the king taking his own life in his bedroom at Sanssouci Palace on October 8th, 1820. After his death, his wife moved his body to the citadel, where till this day, he's buried. And from that point on, the destruction of King Henri Christophe's beloved palace began.
They just loot everything. They take the crown, they take the jewels, they take the money, and they continue to loot it for several years after that, to the point where it's just completely dilapidated. So even before the earthquake, it's not in its splendor. It's not being used. It's not a site and symbol of like freedom and independence and equality and all these things that Christophe had meant it to symbolize. It's like that desolator of the North. That's what the Republic calls him. That desolator of the North, the usurper. You know, there's all these epithets against him.
Though it was ravaged by soldiers, Sanssouci, for the most part, still stood, at least for another 20 years.
Yeah, so in May of 1842, this magnitude 8.1 earthquake strikes the north.
You may hear Haiti and earthquake and think of the massive earthquake that hit Port-au-Prince in 2010. Well, that one was a 7.0 magnitude earthquake. This 8.1 magnitude quake had tremors that were felt as far away as Arkansas. But nowhere was as badly struck as northern Haiti.
And the palace was not spared. In fact, there was a huge tsunami that came through and water went all the way up to where the palace is, even though it's not on the coast. So you could just imagine the amount of devastation. And that's how the palace kind of gets to the current state that it's in. Of course, the dilapidation continues because once the structure is no longer there, then it's completely exposed to the elements the way that it is now.
Wow. When did the ruins of Sanssouci Palace begin being a tourist attraction? Like where it is now, where Haitians like glorify it. And I mean, I guess, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, when did it become this thing that people like my mom are like, yeah, you know, I've been to Sanssouci. And
you know, I think there was always kind of tourism to the area because even in 1824, a man named Charles-Hérome Dumel has a book that he publishes called Voyage to the North of Haiti. And it's kind of the first travel narrative. And he goes there to check it out. And he says there's already a guide. And travelers who came to Haiti always went there. That was always one of their stops, including the abolitionists who came from England and the United States later in the 19th century after Christophe's death. So I think it pretty quickly wasn't necessarily this sort of considered, you know, the pilgrimage spot to Haitians necessarily, but certainly for foreigners. But really the heyday of that tourism comes in the early 20th century when U.S. capital figures out, oh, we can send cruise ships there, we can send tourist groups there. And then throughout the 20th century into the 1970s, there's all these brochures and it's like, you can still hear Christophe's ghost walking around. And, you know, they were really, really packaging it and marketing it.
And this brings me to what fascinates me most about this place. What makes it really wondrous and honestly able to attract tourists even as it's in ruins. Despite its current condition, Henri Christophe's main goal still worked. People have never forgotten his legacy. People hope to leave monuments that they'll be remembered for. But let's be honest, it doesn't always work. Sanssouci isn't still standing in the best condition, but that's almost irrelevant. The ruins of Sanssouci tell a story, and that story is as inspirational as any mint condition monument. If you want more of Henri Christophe's story, keep an eye out for Marlena's upcoming book about him called The First and Last King of Haiti. And also, to get to Sanssouci Palace, you would have to fly into Haiti's nearest major city, Cap-Haïtien. Sanssouci is about a 45-minute drive from there. And once you get there, there will 100% be guides waiting to tell you all about King Henri Christophe and his luxurious palace. This podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. Our production team includes
Johanna Mayer,
Dylan Thuris,
Doug Baldinger,
Chris Naka,
Camille Stanley,
Manolo Morales,
Gabby Gladney.
Our technical director is
Casey Holford.
Our theme and end credit music is by Sam Tindall. This episode was sound designed by me and mixed by
Luce Fleming.
If you want to learn more, be sure to visit atlasobscura.com. There's a link in our episode description. And my name is Baudelaire.
The world isn't wide enough for those with an insatiable desire for discovery. The all-new 2024 Lincoln Nautilus Hybrid SUV offers the power and freedom to explore further and deeper than ever before. Intuitive, smart features ensure that you're always connected to the road ahead. Inside, a thoughtfully designed cabin immerses you in a universe that is all your own. The larger-than-life panoramic display spans the entire width of the cabin. It's customizable and interactive. Drivers can even personalize their backgrounds with a series of nature-inspired themes. This vehicle signals the arrival of an exciting new chapter for Lincoln. Discover more about the 2024 Lincoln Nautilus at Lincoln.com.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.